It is Tuesday. That means we check in with Justin Atlanti from Lending For You for Home Run Finance. He joins me now. Good afternoon, Justin. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Lee. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. You've got some CommSec economic insights to kick off this segment this week.
Yeah, some new home loan lending data for August CommSec have come out with, and it's quite interesting that home loans fell by 4.3% in August, but they're up 47.4% on the year, so that's a massive lot. And the average mortgage has lifted $80,000. So in other words, the average person in Australia has had their mortgage increased by about $80,000, which is amazing. I mean, reflecting, you know, probably the influence of the home builder cutoff dates, loans for construction have also fallen for six months now after rising for 8 months prior to that. Investor home loans have risen for 10 straight months, and the value of investor home loans now stands at a six-year high of about $9.5 billion. And in the news, we've had some talk from the Treasurer and talk from APRA and Reserve Bank about what they're going to do in terms of trying to slow the housing market. Well, housing, while it's been an owner-occupier story over the last 12 months, investor lending has now doubled in just over a year. So those policymakers will be watching the trends for those who are buying or building homes to live in, as well as those looking to lock in that investment. We've got renovation loans fell in August. The Reserve Bank's going to release some financial stability review next Friday, and investors will be looking at all those references pretty closely. But for the average new mortgage for people wanting to buy, as I mentioned, it's up over 80,000 to 580,900. That's a pretty big mortgage.
And those people that bought their homes around the turn of the century are probably shaking their heads right about now listening to those stats.
Yeah, but look, they can. I mean, the average mortgage, it's influenced by interest rates, home prices, you know, the size and quality of the home purchased, as well as changes in wages, you know, other items in the household budget. But if the average borrower needs to find an extra $80,000, this is probably going to have a bit of an influence on future spending. And just to give you an idea, we're sitting sixth across all of the states and territories in Australia. The dearest place, obviously, is New South Wales, where the average mortgage size is $760,000. Victoria is $629,000. And to give you an idea, Tasmania is now the average home loan in Tassie is $402,400.
Woohoo! Which, again, you know, on Tasmania wages, it's a big discussion, has been for years, is quite high in the whole scheme of things, isn't it?
It is. We've got a higher mortgages here now than they do in South Australia and also the Northern Territory.
Yeah, wow. Building approval rates, how are they going?
Yeah, look, they rose for August in most states, and that reflects that strong demand for housing, despite we sort of saw the end of the housing stimulus measures in March. Residential dwelling approvals increased by about 33.7% in the 3 months to August, according to the ABS. The value of renovations approved also reached its second highest level on record. So households, make sense. We can't go anywhere. They're spending money that they typically would have spent on an overseas holiday and on improving their living space. And we've seen more people seek medium density housing, and multi-unit approvals were nearly 40% higher than the 3 months to July 2020. And in particular, Queensland and Western Australia saw the highest demand for apartments to accommodate their growing population. In seasonally adjusted terms, total residential building approvals increased in the 3 months to August compared to the same time last year. And Tassie was about 10.7% up. So that, you know, all that demand continues to create employment opportunities into the second half of 2022.
All interesting stats, and so many variables at the moment. I mean, not being able to travel, you know, taking that into consideration when, you know, travel is allowed again, that money's going to go somewhere else. So it'll be really interesting to see the shift, won't it?
It will do. And I think, you know, there's also a lot of people playing in the residential space to get a return on investment when you can get 0.01% for a term deposit to put your money in. It makes it very attractive for a self-funded retiree to purchase a residence and put somebody in there paying rent.
Now, Justin, last week after our chat, as soon as we hung up from each other, a bloke phoned in on our hotline 1300 655 111, and he said, "Look, I really enjoy the finance segment each and every week, but it'd be really interesting if you could touch on oil prices every now and again. Do you reckon we could drum up some numbers for him this afternoon if he's listening?"
Yes, we definitely can. So after you told me that, Lee, I thought, well, I'd better get my act together and see what's going on in the world of oil. And OPEC, which is basically, according to Bloomberg, they're going to remain the leading factor in any oil price movements in the next few months. Control of the price of oil is very much in the hands of OPEC. In the United States, for example, there's simply not enough production to catch up in a way that would be necessary if we needed extra oil. And that's quite a difference from just 3 years ago, when the US, thanks to its second sort of shale oil boom, was considered the leading factor in oil prices. As the boom turned the country, which I didn't know until we did this research, the largest oil producer globally. When you think of oil, you normally think of somewhere like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, yeah.
But the US was the largest oil producer globally. So crude oil has rose sort of closer to about $80 US per barrel at the end of last week. And according to some analysts, OPEC is unlikely to agree to request to add more production, because that would bring down prices. And not just because it benefits from higher prices, OPEC, and that's all the people that are involved in producing oil, but because some members of that cartel simply cannot boost their production capacity quickly, and they don't have the kind of oil in storage to keep the supply higher. So the near-term price outlook at the moment looks pretty much that there's a trend of recovery. In other words, we're going to see an increase in the cost of oil and in turn, the cost of petrol, of course.
Which this week is pretty up there in the whole scheme of things, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. That sort of thing could remain in place longer too if the winter, which we're coming to in the Northern Hemisphere, turns out as cold as expected. They've got gas reserves running lower than the 5-year average in Europe. They've got some energy shortages in China, forcing some factory shutdowns. So demand for oil is likely to remain pretty robust for
very
some
good
time.
All right, mate, we'll leave it there.
Yeah, so there you go. A little bit about oil. Something I haven't sort of looked into too much, but it does tell us that we're not going to see any cheaper petrol prices too much soon.
Not what I wanted to hear. Good on you, Justin. Thank you, mate.
No worries.
Justin Delaney from Lending for You on the Home Run.